I don't know if anyone is considering a move to San Francisco, but if you are, you can get a really good deal on a place to stay. If you look at this building, this is the Millennium Tower that was built just a few years back in San Francisco. It is one of the most luxurious sets of apartments that you can get. These condominiums have every perk you can want. There's only one minor drawback. The building is currently sinking. And so, as you can see from this picture, suddenly all of these cracks started appearing in the building. In fact, there was a couple of folks who came in to their condo one night and the windows had shattered. And these were people way on up. It wasn't like a rocket hit them or something. And it's because the building was beginning to sink. And so they began looking at this. And what had happened, if I understand, is that there had been a little too much moisture in the soil, and so they tried to pull all the moisture out, and when they did, that unsteadied the building. And now the builders face multi-million dollar lawsuits and really a difficulty in knowing what to do. Now, why do I tell you all of this? Well, in a lot of ways, this is a pretty apt description of a foundationless Christian, that you can look really good. You can appear to be something that is good and safe, but there are serious problems. And I got to thinking, you know, if Jesus had conducted his ministry in the 21st century, rather than calling the Pharisees whitewashed tombs, calling them millennial towers might have been a good way of referring to them. Because here were folks who didn't have the foundation they needed, yet on the surface, they looked very good. So our question then is, how do we keep from being like that? Well, God tells us that. And in fact, in the study that the apostle does with the Colossians as he writes his first chapter of that epistle, he says, what you've got to be is stable and steadfast. And so as you look at these two words, what we have here is a description of how we keep from being foundationless. Here's how we keep from being like this facade that appears on the surface to be in very good shape, but underneath has some very major problems. So let's get kind of a running start with this. Go with me to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. And as the apostle begins to build his case here, he's going to talk about Jesus and the various things associated with our relationship with him. And so in verse 16, going on down through verse 18, he's going to make the point about the preeminence of Jesus, the place that Jesus holds and the place that he must hold in our lives. Let's look beginning in verse 16. He says, for by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. That is in everything he might be preeminent. So there we have it. That if we are going to be what we need to be in Jesus, there is the recognition that in everything he comes first, including our lives. He is our head. But the apostle doesn't stop there. He continues on and he says, what you realize is as your head, he's bringing you to God. Let's look in verse 19. For in him, all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. He is preeminent. He is our head. He is our reconciliation. Paul has built a very strong case for the relationship that Christ is to have in our lives. But he says there's expectations. The fact that Jesus has done all of this does not mean that there is nothing expected of you and me. And that's where we find the verse that we're going to consider this morning. Verse 23 says, if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven. I want us for just a minute to focus on the beginning and the end of this verse. We'll come back to the middle here in a minute. But for now, think about how he starts this idea with the condition, if indeed you continue in the faith. Now, depending on what translation you use, some translations are going to say continue in faith, some are going to say continue in your faith, and some are going to say continue in the faith, the third, I believe, being the right choice here. Because the apostle here is discussing this gospel, which he mentions in that second part, and goes on to say, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven. The gospel, the message, the faith is the idea of what Jesus has done for us. That he came, that he died, that he was resurrected, so that we too could enjoy that resurrection one day. You look at that in connection with the last part of this verse, which has been proclaimed in to all creation under heaven. Does that have a ring of familiarity to it? Paul here is sounding a whole lot like the commission that the apostles were given. That as Jesus was about to ascend back into heaven, he said, go into all of the world and preach the gospel to every creature. What's the apostle saying? Well, he's saying that's what's happened here. All the world has heard. The preaching or the proclamation of the gospel has been given where? In the creation to every creature. So what he's saying to the Colossians is, you've heard the pure message of the gospel. And not only have you heard it, you've responded to it. You're in the faith. Now let's put the middle part of our verse back in. If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you have heard. I would suggest to you that the idea of the personal faith, your faith, is what Paul is talking about here with hope. So look at that idea now. If indeed you continue in the faith, the gospel, the message, the saving power of Jesus, not shifting from your faith. In other words, you're not letting yourself grow weak. And obviously those two ideas are very joined together. That if I'm keeping the gospel message, the faith, alive in my heart and my mind, then I'm going to stay where I need to. I'm not going to be like that tower in San Francisco that's kind of shifting about, that's kind of having major difficulties because it can't stay in one place. Instead, I'm not shifting. So our obvious question is, how do I keep my faith in the faith and not shifting from where I need to be? He answers that question. He says you must remain stable and steadfast. That if you are going to stay where you need to stay, if you are going to be built on the rock of Jesus Christ, then you've got to remain stable and steadfast. So let's talk about that. It may be that the apostle is using these words in a synonymous way. Sometimes we do that, don't we? We'll say one word that means the same just to make a point. But I'm not so sure that's what he's doing here. Because as you look at these two words, there is a very different nuance that you find in them. In the word stable, we have here the concept of being established or grounded. And the big idea that I think we need to get from this is the foundation. Here is that idea of being built on the rock that we're going to talk about here in a minute. It's the fact that we are where we need to be. And so what does the Lord tell us about that? How does He say that you are going to have that stability? Well, let's think about our three terms here. Established and grounded with foundation. And let's look at three passages. As we look at what Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 5, he says that this stability comes by staying in God. It's through Him. Peter says, and after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to His eternal glory in Christ, will Himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell in this verse if Peter's talking about what's going to happen eternally or what's going to happen now, so I choose the easy answer. He's doing both. He's saying that what God will one day do for us eternally, we're getting that now, that He's giving us this idea of the establishment. So it's through God that we're going to be able to remain stable. And he goes on to say it's going to occur when you and I have the love for God that we need. Let's look this time at what Paul says in the Ephesian letter, chapter 3, verse 17, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you being rooted and grounded. So here's the idea again in our definition of stability. When we love God, we understand that that foundation is through Him, but we also understand that God's going to keep us where we need. He's keeping us grounded. Let's look at one other. Because it's not only through Him and not only through His love, but it's the concept of hearing and doing what God says. As Jesus introduced the parable of the two builders, and He was talking about the storms that came against the man who built his house on the rock. He says, the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. Here's our foundation. Here's the idea that we are building on a place that's going to be level, but more importantly than that, it's going to be firm. That foundation is going nowhere. That's how we remain stable. Now, compare that to what we find with the word steadfast. Here we've got certainly an idea of stability, but the idea here is we're not going to be moved off of that foundation. We're going to stay where we need to stay because we're fixed in our purpose. How do we do that? Well, the simple answer to that is we decide where we want to be and we don't get off course. So here is the concept that the New Testament in particular really drives home so many different ways, where the writers say, you need to be looking toward heaven. You need to consider where your ultimate goal is, and you never take your eyes off of that. That's what will lead to this steadfastness. Look with me over to 1 Corinthians 15. We don't have time this morning to do a lot of in-depth study in this chapter, but I just want to make a point here with you. This, of course, is the great resurrection chapter of the Bible. And so the first portion of it is, if the resurrection is not true, your faith is in vain, the gospel's in vain, Christ has died for nothing. So he's built through all of that, and about halfway through he changes, and he says, but the resurrection did take place. And because of that, you'll be raised up. You'll be given this body fit for eternity. Let's pick up in verse 54. He says, when the perishable puts on the imperishable, and the mortal puts on immortality, then shall come to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. So here we've got the idea that because of the resurrection, we have the opportunity to overcome sin. That what could destroy us and lead to eternal death, that's not a problem for us because we are saved through Jesus. Now what I just did is what a lot of men do when they preach and teach on 1 Corinthians 15. They quit before they hit the climax of it. You see, the apostle has been building a point, and we stopped a verse too early. So let's see what it says. Look with me in verse 58 with the word therefore. So here's our point coming. My beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. What's his whole point in this chapter? His whole point is keep on going. Don't quit where you are. Christ has died. Christ has been resurrected. You will die. You will be resurrected. As he defeated death, you will defeat death. So don't give up. That's how you keep your focus on heaven. And so here in chapter 15, the entire point of the chapter is we've got something to build on. We're not building on sand. We've got the rock of Jesus Christ and His death and His resurrection for us as a way to survive. So then, when we think about this, we think about where we are now and what that means in our walk every day. So we turn this time to Peter. And Peter says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him. And then look at our term here. Firm in your faith, knowing that your brothers throughout the world are suffering similar things. What's Peter saying? He's saying the way you resist the devil is you dig your heels in. The way you resist the devil is to build your house on the rock. The way you resist the devil is to stay firm in your faith, your hope in that resurrection to come. And when we understand that, we then understand the idea of what it means to keep ourselves stable and steadfast. But here's the real question. How do I do it? I understand what it means. I understand what God has said. But how do I do it? That's a tough question. Not in the fact of finding the answer, because I think the answer is readily available, but in the idea of taking the personal application to say, there are things that I personally must do if I'm not going to be the guy who's building a house on the sand. There are things that I must do if my foundation is going to be stable and my house steadfast no matter what comes. This morning, I'm not going to tell you anything earth-shaking in its newness. In fact, it's a very old message. But it's what God has told us. And the first thing is an obvious thing. But yet what God says is if you want to remain stable and steadfast, the very first thing you got to do is to inspect your foundation. Is that not an important thing when you're buying a house? House can look really, really good. But if you call someone in to examine that house and the guy says, well, there are cracks all in the foundation. And in fact, you're going to, and I actually heard this from a house I looked at one time. By the way, I didn't buy it. He said, you're going to have to jack up the side of that house, and you're going to have to rebuild that bottom foundation there. I said, I'll look at some other houses. That's not something I desired to do. Well, is the same thing not true spiritually? That we look at where we are, and we understand that God is saying to us, this is going to be really serious on the day of judgment. I think this is probably the most frightening passage in the New Testament. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Here were people who from ground up looked really good. They were involved in great projects. They were involved in great activities. They had the name of the Lord always on their lips. They show up ready to be welcomed into heaven. And Christ says, you got no foundation. You don't even know who I am, and therefore I don't know who you are. I think you would say with me, I do not want to be in that number. So how do I avoid that? I examine my foundation. Let me put a really strange question on the screen here. And that question is, what if I am the they? All right, so let me explain that. I've noticed over the years, this is especially true with teenage classes, but adults as well. You might say, well, why do people have such trouble following God? And almost without fail, the first two words will be, well, they. It's the idea that I can see in others things I cannot see in myself. And so we say things like, well, they don't follow the Bible. There are a few groups out there, some been in the news lately, but the vast majority of, quote, Christian groups, churches. Do you think they're going to meet you at the door and say, welcome to our assembly? We don't believe the Bible here. We don't follow the Bible here. No. We think we're right. We think we're walking in the truth, but they are not. And that's because we're really good at examining the foundations of others and not taking a pretty hard look at our own. How do we do that? Nothing earth-shattering here. It's going to require diligent study. We're going to have to stay with the Word. We sometimes can get in a bad habit of kind of the hunt-and-peck method of studying the Bible. We want to prove our idea right, so we find the verses that'll prove it right. Never look at the context. Never look at what's said in other places. Okay, that's dangerous. So then, if I'm going to be a diligent student of the Word of God, that's going to require time. And if I get into the habit of saying, one of these days I'm going to study all of that out, when I'm retired I'll have so much more time, when the kids are older I'll have so much more time, we're never going to take a look at our foundation. So what does God say? He says the very first thing you need to do is to look and see what I've said in my Word. Now, what else? He also says you need to trust me. These two concepts are so interrelated you can't break them apart. How do we know who God is? It's through the Word. How do we learn what God wants? It's through the Word. What does the Word tell us? Who God is. So when I come to trust that the Word is true, that God is the one who's being described there, what I'm going to do is to use that Word to understand better who He is so that I can trust Him more. How do I do that? Well, first thing I realize is that if I'm shallow in my understanding of God, I'm going to be a shallow Christian, and a shallow Christian will never make it to heaven. So here we find, first of all, saying to ourselves that if I don't understand who God is, then I am in a great deal of trouble because that's going to lead me to follow the wrong God. Now that may sound a little strange on the surface, but let's think about when that happened once. Back in the days of Hosea the prophet, fiery prophet with a fiery message, he said this to the people of Israel, "Hear the word of the Lord, O children of Israel, and the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. There is no faithfulness," and we got our word here, "or steadfast love, and no knowledge of God in the land." So if you and I could somehow jump in a time machine and go back to the days of Hosea, and ask the people, is it true you have no knowledge of God? They would laugh at us, wouldn't they? They would say, well, of course we know who Jehovah is. Of course we know who He is because we're His people. What God's talking about here, the message of Hosea, is not the fact that they had no theoretical knowledge of God. It's the fact that they were not built on a steadfast foundation with Him. And that's why they so easily departed. And why so easily they would go after other gods. Can that happen to you and me? It most certainly can. You see, if we're not diligent to learn who God is, we may serve the Sunday school God, that God we learned about when we were 5 years old, who's kind of fuzzy to us. We don't have a lot of knowledge, but we know He's pretty insistent on three times a week. We got that down, but that's about it. Or we may think that we're serving this God who is sitting in heaven and He's looking for any possible way to keep us out of heaven. He is looking with such diligence that whatever we do, whatever happens, we may lose our faith 50 times in one day because He's sitting there ready to get us. Or we may serve the God who is all love, who would never even dream of destroying anybody. And this business of hell and losing your salvation, those are additions because we know that the God we serve is a God who does not destroy. You see how easily that happens? And how so much of the religious world is going after all of these different gods because I started to say they, I better not say that, right? Because we have not been diligent to build our foundation as we should. So what do we do? Well, what we do is we figure out who God is. You see, we may have gotten a good concept when we're five, and we may understand about his hatred of sin, and we may understand about his love of people, but I got to put the whole thing together. And so what that means is that I'm with the psalmist on this. Psalm 119, it's hard to pick out just one verse to make this point because the entirety of the psalm revolves around it. But he says this, "With my whole heart I seek you." That's how you find out who God is. Seeking Him with everything you've got. So when I do that, I can then come to trust Him. And the way that I do this is through finding Him for what He really is. I would give you this challenge, as I have challenged myself. Try to read the Bible with no predispositions. That's hard to do. It's hard to say, okay, I'm going to forget everything I know, but as much as you can. Try to go to the Bible and look at it from the standpoint of, if I were reading this for the very first time, what would I come across in my understanding of God? Because I believe when we do that, what we're going to do is we're going to pay attention to what God says. We're listening to the words that He actually speaks. We're looking at His actions. We're looking at His reactions. We're looking at His emotions when He's angry, when He's sad, when He laughs. And if I can take those things and I can say, okay, I'm going to keep my mind open. I'm going to listen to what God is saying. I'm going to look at the words He's using. I'm going to see how He behaves. I'm going to look at why He behaves that way. I think we can find a real picture of God. And I'm just going to warn you, He may be a little different from the one we're used to. But that's what He wants. He wants us to see Him for who He is. Let me add one more thing here. We also become effective in our prayers. Someone once falsely said, prayer's a conversation, prayer's not a conversation. Because in our idea of that term, that means an exchange, that I talk and then you talk and I'm listening and you're listening. God's not going to answer us in that way. Now, He will answer. But it's not going to be in this conversational style. No, what prayer does is it gives us the opportunity to acknowledge who He is and to acknowledge who we are. And to understand that within that, there are going to be things that we praise about Him and things that we thank Him for and things that we ask Him for. You see, that's part of how I know who He is. And understanding that His answer, though it may not come immediately, will come. The right answer will come. How do we know that? Well, Philippians 4. Do not be anxious about sin, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. This is tough. Because what it means is when I pray, and God doesn't answer the way I think He ought to answer, is going to make me trust Him that He has the right answer in mind. I may not understand it. This side or the other side of eternity. But I trust it's the right one. So how do I do that? Well, in relation to our prayers, before I ever pray, I think about what I need to pray for. Prayer is not this spontaneous thing that, you know, I never plan it out, I never think about it. Sometimes that may be the case. Sometimes we've got those prayers that because of the situation, immediately we shoot a prayer to God. But many other times, we need to be thinking about it. This needs to be a great deal of focus in our attention to say, what do I need to pray for? How do I need to pray for it? Because it's remembering who we're approaching. This God who we're seeing through His Word and understanding that He's for us. And when it's those times that I don't know what to pray for, it's then I trust the Spirit to do His job. Spirit who says, I know there's times you don't know what to pray for. I'll take care of you. You ever been in those situations? Times when something's going on in your life and you're thinking, well, if I pray this, this will be a negative consequence, or if I pray this, this will be a negative consequence. And we say, Lord, I just don't know what to pray for. God says, I got you covered. You're okay. But that only happens when I trust Him. when I have this relationship with Him where I'm honestly trying to find who He is and to see Him in His purity within His Word so that I can really build a foundational relationship with Him. Let me say this also from a little bit further in the book of Colossians. We continue steadfastly. That means we don't give up. That when we're needing to pray, we keep on praying. And if we don't get the answer we want, we keep on praying. If we don't get the answer we want, we keep on praying. And if God never gives us that answer, then we thank Him for His watchful care, for not giving us something that we may not need, can may not handle. And we do it with thanksgiving. And when we do that, and we build that relationship through knowing Him and trusting Him, we don't give up. That's really the message of steadfastness. It's not quitting. It's not ending too soon. That's what every sin has in common, is that we quit God too soon. We look for an alternate plan. But God says the steadfastness of this is keeping your focus of determining if you really want to go to heaven. Wanting to go to heaven is not the same thing as not wanting to go to hell. Those are two separate things. Because if I don't want to go to hell, my entire relationship with God is built on kind of a negative. See, the idea, if you just leave me alone, if you wouldn't have this threat here, I could be happy, I could be in good shape. Does God want a relationship like that? The idea of really wanting to go to heaven is the idea of, I know God, I love God, I trust God, I want to be with God. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, hell may kind of scare us in that direction a bit, kind of give us a push in the right way. But if that is the whole concept of my salvation is built on sand. It's not going to stand. It cannot stand. So then, steadfastness means the desire to go to heaven and allowing nothing to get in the way of that happening. So we go back to the parable of the two builders. And here is this storm that's beating ferociously on the houses, and one house stands. The one who hears and does. Are storms going to come? What'd Paul say to the Thessalonians? We ourselves boast about you and the churches of God for what? For your steadfastness and faith in all your persecutions and in the afflictions that you are enduring. Yeah, they're going to come. And that will tell us a whole lot about our relationship with God when they do. If I'm pretty much ready to give up, pretty much ready to call it quits, I've got some examination of my stability and steadfastness to look at. Let me add one final thing here. The way I remain steadfast is also in learning from other Christians. This perhaps is one of the most valuable resources that goes virtually untapped. Because nobody wants to talk about themselves in this way, because the people who want to talk, who are good at this are so humble, they would say, nobody wants to hear about my story. And sometimes we're too busy to ask people who've gone through things similar to us, how did you do it? You remember what James said as he was leading off his discussion on Job? He says, behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. See, you and I don't have to reinvent the wheel every time a storm comes around. Because I can assure you, since we are tempted in ways that are common to men, somebody else has gone through it. And somebody else has survived it. And that person has the ability to say to us, here's how you keep your focus on heaven. When I put all of these things together, I will find my foundation on the faith, and I will find that there is no storm that can destroy my faith. But it all boils down to this. I got to stay focused on what's most important. I can't take my eyes off God, and I can't take my eyes off heaven. And if I will commit myself to that, God has said, it's going to get rough. It's going to be difficult. At times it's going to appear that I'm not there. But you can trust that I am. And when you do, you will be stable and steadfast.